Open your eyes. Wake up, Link.
I'm Luke Summerhayes.
I'm James J. Miles.
And I'm James the Jaster Stewart.
And you're listening to Hyrule Field Report. And Jas, what did we do last time?
Well, last time we were chatting about the Thunderhead Isles and the Spirit Temple.
And Jay, what are we up to this week?
Well, this time we are going to be doing some wrap-up content. We're more or less ready to go and speak about the ending of the game now. Mm-hmm. However, there's a fair chunk of stuff left to do around the overworld. And I suppose, technically, we don't know where Ganondorf is yet either, so we should probably find out about that too. But yeah, we've got some things arranged to chat about that we've not spoken about as of yet. And we'll preface this all by saying there's a lot of stuff in this game. We're not going to speak about absolutely everything. It's just impossible.
Yeah. For example, we're going to sort of talk about finishing off the shrines. I think at the end of this podcast, we will not have spoken about every shrine.
Yeah. I mean,
especially when there's a couple of sky puzzles that are repeated, essentially, like 4 or 5 times and stuff like that.
Yeah, the ones where you're just taking a crystal to another location, I think we've milked all the chat we can out of that at this stage.
I think we've done that way more than I expected us to be honest, because there's a lot of those shrine crystal quests.
Proving grounds that we haven't spoken about, you know the drill by now. We might, selectively choose a few shrines that are got some interesting puzzles to talk about, but we're not going to go through all of them. However, I will say, if there are any that you really would like us to speak about, drop us a tweet, send us a message on whenever you want to send us a message, an email, whatever it may be, and we'll happily oblige. But
coming on from that, we're probably about 3-4 episodes away from finishing the game, and then after that we do want to do a sort of questions and answers, listeners' thoughts kind of episodes, so I'll start warning you from here. Please do get in touch. We have Twitter at Hyrule Field Pod. You can probably find each of us and DM us.
Yeah,
we have an email as well, I think. But yeah, please do get in touch. Let us know your thoughts. Even if you just want to drop it as like a comment under one of the episodes or something, on whatever your listening app is, I'll probably find it. And then we can do a final episode. We'll read your thoughts on the game. If there's a bit that we missed that you want us to talk about, we'll hit it up. If you want to ask us a question, feel free. And yeah, we'll start nagging you about that from here on out.
But on that note, Luke, where will our grand wrap-up journey begin?
Well, I guess we've got plenty of shrines to choose from, but there's 3 very big shrine complexes that are quite noticeable even just on the map. We've got the 3 labyrinths.
Yes. We've got North Lomé Labyrinth. Say that 5 times quickly. We've got Lomé Labyrinth Island. I'm really having to enunciate it here. And South, I presume. Let me just double check. Yes, South Lomé Labyrinth down in the desert. That was a stretch. But these are, as you said, complexes. There's not just a simple shrine. The act of actually getting to the shrine is a bit of a journey unto itself.
So the labyrinths were in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
I think the way they've been expanded in Tears of the Kingdom does make them a lot cooler.
Yes. So in Breath of the Wild, I do remember there was some stuff where you kind of climbed, clambered over walls and kind of went through some tunnels that they'd maybe burrowed to get under parts of the maze, but at its whole it was just a maze, right, in Breath of the Wild. These we'll get to it, but yes, I do agree, far more interesting. Do you have a preference for which one we start with?
I think we'll start with the North one because I remember it being the simplest. Like, as long as we end on the island, because that one was the trickiest to get to and deal with, as I recall.
Yes. So, the North Lomé Labyrinth. So when you first arrive there, there's a tablet outside which is engraved with some words of prophecy. And it says, whoever wakes the dragon ring deep in the maze will be rewarded. So our first task is to actually reach the center of the maze. And
what's worth pointing out is, although it is a maze, there's a bunch of secrets you can find by doing the maze. But to do the main quest in all three, you can actually just follow a path that's been left for you.
Yeah,
there's like...
acorns.
Use that acorns, right? Like it's...
Yeah, it's set. There's like some Zonite research team researcher has gotten here before you. And they've always left a little diary and it says, oh, I've left a trail of acorns to remember where I've been.
Mm-hmm.
And that will get you directly to where you need to be.
Big vibes of, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy.
Definitely lean into that Link Himbo energy there. They're it's not a simple maze because large chunks of the ground are covered with gloom, right, as you traverse through.
Yes. And sometimes, I mean, if you are trying to search out every piece of treasure, it won't just involve walking around the maze at ground level. You'll have to climb up and clamber through a hole here and there. And...
Mm-hmm. And typically, I want to say there's usually a Gloomhand somewhere.
Yeah, I think one of them definitely. I definitely remember.
I don't think all three of them do, but there was one of them. It was a key part, because what you end up having to do when it says the dragon ring, it's not a ring as in that you would wear on your finger. It's one of the big sort of Stargate-y type rings you go around activating.
The logo of the game.
For a lot of the Zonai stuff. Yeah. It's
like a terminal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when we first saw the logos of this game with the big sort of dragon rings, I thought they looked kind of like Celtic imagery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Like you see a lot of guys with that as like a tattoo. Guys of sometimes questionable politics. but... See alongside the rest tattoo. Of the Zonai stuff.
I'm just kidding.
Alongside the rest of the Zonai stuff, it does feel a little more like they're going for more like a Mayan thing or an Aztec thing.
Yeah, I definitely get that vibe as a whole, just especially with their way of dress as well, right?
Yeah. I think it's because it's also in that like blue... that blue sci-fi effect they sometimes use for symbols and things makes it look a little bit more like it could just be paint or tattoo in a more Celtic way.
Mm.
I'm sure you boys have painted yourself up blue and gone screaming down to England.
Yep. We got all the way to York and we're pushed back.
It's just a normal Monday morning.
I don't know if this is true, but when we were on a family holiday when I was like six, we went to York. We did like the Jorvik Centre. We went to like some Viking stuff and we're doing some shopping and that. And I remember walking about York with my parents. And my dad pointed up at the top of the rooftops and said, do you know it's still legal for an Englishman to shoot a Scotsman with a bow and arrow? So you better watch the rooftop, son. For the rest of the holiday, that was it. I was petrified. I was going to get sniped.
That is one of those like, oh, this is an old law that's still on the books that you hear people bring up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I could literally shoot you with a bow and arrow and get away with it in a court of law.
Yeah. But 6-year-old me did not know that.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
I was half
expecting. That's because I also remember hearing those kind of laws as a child. But I guess, you know, I'm learning about my privilege today, because as the Englishman, they never scared me.
Yeah, you're like, oh, cool, I can shoot a Scotsman, brilliant.
Although, maybe because I lived in the South, it was always a Welshman in our versions.
Ah, I see, I see. Mm.
They don't even get to be on the flag.
Shame.
Which is gutting, because that could mean we'd have a dragon on our flag, yeah. Which would be sick.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were talking about if you guys left, that's what we'd do.
Put a dragon, yeah. Yeah.
We are expecting the Irish.
They just put it in one of the quadrants of where the English flag used to be. That's what it would happen. Like, it wouldn't be, like, massively emblazoned over the middle, I'd imagine. Put it off to the side.
Mm. Put four dragons of different colours in each corner, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Do the the research diaries that are dotted through the labyrinth, do they say anything of note, or is it more just kind of a general...
It's more like, I don't know what's going on. I don't remember, like, learning any lore from them.
Yeah, it's more just, oh, I'm very washed, help me.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I think I almost made it, but I'm going to have to give up.
Yeah.
And that's usually, like, or right like before you go through the next room and find
stuck,
the ring.
Like, a particular puzzle that they can't figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a puzzle they can't figure out, or there's a bit of gloom they can't get past.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I also wonder if they're just getting to the ring and having the Master Koga problem where it won't activate for them.
Every chance.
They don't have a goat hand.
Every chance, yeah.
But eventually, we can get to the ring in the centre.
There's a shrine there.
Yep.
It's nothing to it. It's just
basically your fast travel shrine.
Correct. It is literally I forgot the word. It is
Rauru's blessing.
That's the one. Thank you. Yep.
Is it in all the shrines? Is it a Rauru's blessing at the top and the bottom? Sorry, in all the mazes, I mean. I think it is.
Not
I can literally just check on my
not
game.
Not at the top. Nope. We'll get to that in a minute.
Ah.
But, yes.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So in the middle, yes, we'll get the Rauru's Blessing, but we'll also activate the Dragon's Ring, and lo and behold, big wind.
Is there?
No, totally
that's
wrong.
The challenge. Yeah. So all three of the labyrinths have a second sky labyrinth floating very high above them.
Yes.
Usually with some sections that are broken off and sort of creating a trail up there. But nonetheless, the challenge is figuring out a way up to that sky labyrinth because, yeah, it doesn't just launch you up there.
Correct. I got that totally wrong. Yeah.
I know why you're thinking that because of what happens in a little bit.
Yes. I think... Now I would probably just, I would probably just use the tried and tested hover bike to get my way up there. But like maybe warp to an island I've got nearby, like a sky island, so I'm starting from a higher vertical point. But at the time, how did I do it? I think because I hadn't made the hover bike, and I distinctly remember this with the North Labyrinth. Because I think I did the other ones later. I think I made my way to... So if you look in the sky, reasonably close to there is the one of those floating star islands that we get the... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we'll be talking about them
We'll be talking about
soon.
Them soon, yes. And I think from there... I was building like a series of like contraptions with like rockets... and things to try and rockets and wings to try and get myself along and close to there, and I think eventually I somehow squeezed my way into it, but it wasn't as smooth as I'd have liked it to have been with the trusty hover bike. But did you just use the hover bike, or did you have to a more special way of getting up there?
I never actually hover biked very much in this game, so I was ballooning my way up to all of these.
Mm.
Nice cam journey.
Like a couple of rockets on the side, big balloon.
I think, like, I don't know if it's this labyrinth specifically, but I'm pretty sure, like, there's one of them where you can, like, as we said, like, the Sky Labyrinth compared to the one, the Labyrinth on the ground, it's like all broken, like it's all kind of split into three parts almost. And it's got, I'm pretty sure it's got like sections that you can land on, and there's one of the labyrinths you can definitely use. If you get to a certain point, you can use Ascend to make your way up.
Yeah, I think a lot of them, my balloon got me up most of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would do a bit of ascending and jump between islands and stuff.
Oh, yeah, balloon only lasts so long, right?
To get... Yeah.
Because yeah, these are high up. Like, I think other than the dungeons at the Great Sky Island, there's not much else that's vertically higher on the map, right?
Yeah, apart from maybe that that one.
Like the Mission Impossible Tower.
I was thinking of the King Leok Island above.
Yeah, maybe around the same height.
That's super high. Yeah, probably about the same. I think that one just felt high because there was nothing around it.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get up to the higher labyrinth, there's a second sort of terminal we can activate.
Yes.
And this is where it adds a permanent updraft. And you have to glide around, because there's no floor on these sky labyrinths. So you're having to glide around, slip between gaps, like drop down, fly back up, and hit a bunch of... Is it like four terminals you have to activate in each one?
I think it's four, yeah.
Four in each corner, and practically.
Yeah. And then you activate all four of those, and then it gives you a super updraft, which will launch you up to the top where there's one final shrine.
Yes. Fortunately, if you... I think the shrine's actually lowered down. I think you get the shrine first.
That's right, yeah, the shrine is...
Yeah, you get the fast travel point.
It's a fast travel point.
And if you fall or something, then you've got an easy way to get back as well.
Yeah, you're right.
There is actually something to this shrine as well. This one's 10 Bez Shrine. Gravity and Velocity. And with this one, you kind of activate... there's a switch in the middle of the room where you can actually activate like low gravity, which is going to be something that you'll be dealing with within the labyrinth as well, because they've got that low gravity effect that we previously saw. Well, I think
we've seen it on a few sky islands.
Yeah,
mostly.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you use that. You have to alternate between having that on and off to launch a big ball across. And yourself eventually as well to reach certain rooms. So it's giving you a chance to actually play about with the gravity itself rather than having like set gravity. So it's quite an interesting puzzle. It's not something I actually remember them doing anywhere else.
It's a unique one.
This feels like something that would be, you know, maybe ripe for being expanded upon in like a proper temple or a dungeon or something like that.
Yeah, it is maybe a little fiddly, so I can see why it's...
I think they maybe just try to use that shrine as a way to kind of spark an idea in the player of what they could do while they're in the gravity sections, like around the sky.
Yeah.
Especially...
Yeah, no, nowhere else does it let you control the gravity in the same way.
Mm. Yeah, but like you could still like maybe use like certain like zone eye devices to kind of propel yourself like up to like higher points.
True.
I imagine that would be a way, rather than using like the wind and the labyrinths, there'd probably be a way to use the gravity to get to the top of the labyrinth.
This sort of like gravity effect feels like it would be something that would anchor an entire dungeon in previous Zelda games.
Yeah.
Like this would be the dungeon's gimmick, like raising or lowering the water level and like the water temple, for example, in past games. So yeah, it is surprising that they didn't play about with it more. And but I suppose that's just the beauty of this game, is that there's ideas that you'll say, "Ah, that's really cool," and then they're gone again.
Like full game, full.
That's what people always say about the
full game ideas, and there's Mario just like games. A side thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I was actually forgetting: once you finish the four little terminals, you activate a chest where you can get a piece of an armor set for completing these labyrinths.
Not quite.
Oh, do you get
travel somewhere
jump
first
in the gun?
Yeah.
You need to travel for one of.
It opens a little gate at the bottom. Yeah,
correct.
Yeah,
so it opens a gate that leads on the top on the roof of the Sky Labyrinth, which has like a tunnel, which if you dive down it, there's a gate that's opened now on the ground level labyrinth, which then is a further tunnel which leads all the way down to the depths. So you have this really cool moment of pretty much skydiving all the way down from this really high part of the sky down to the depths for the depths equivalent of the labyrinth.
I'd imagine that's like that'll be a lot of people's like first kind of transition from like sky to surface to the depths, like seeing it for the first time. Like
every chance, I think it's the first, at least for him, I can remember, it's like the first intended time you can do that. You can obviously jump from
the only
sky
other time
you'd be able to do it yourself, like if you figured that out. Like, but
yeah,
we had to for the Great Plateau quest. We had to go sky all the way down to the depths.
That's right, yeah.
And then also for the...
Was that not surface to the depths? I don't remember having to go from the sky for Great Plateau.
Maybe you're right. I think... Yeah, and then also Minoru's quest, which we just did, there is like a ground dungeon, a sky dungeon, and a depth dungeon.
It's not
dungeon.
Like the same sort of like...
But it's not necessarily... Yeah, it's not like a straight dive between all three, though.
Yeah.
So that is very cool. And kind of unique to this mission.
Mm-hmm.
But we've talked about it a couple of times. Like, it's really cool when they do this, but I understand why they didn't overdo it, because it's a lot to keep track of. Both on the player's end and probably also on their end.
Yeah. Probably, like, games probably like nearly dying.
Making sure all three of these
are logged in the next all three areas. It's probably doing some magic behind the scenes that you don't see as a player.
Almost certainly.
You have to gently hover as a door waits to open, Metroid style.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why the dive to the depths takes so long.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
It's very it's cooler than looking at a door animation. Yeah,
correct. Or going, why is this door not opening?
That's what's good about the Prime remaster. Like, you don't have to deal with the doors; it just loads really quickly.
Yeah, I think I remember on the GameCube legit wondering if I didn't have the weapon that I thought I did because the tour was taking so long. But down here, there's usually just like a little... It's not another actual labyrinth. It's more like a little battle room to clear.
Yeah, it's still shaped like the labyrinth itself, but there's not... the infrastructure isn't there. Like, there's not like a maze.
Yeah, it's just a big cube.
Yeah. But inside, to get the armor piece you're about to talk about, you have to battle I think it's the level 3 Flux Construct. So you have a little mini boss to finish off your labyrinth quest.
Yeah. Flux Constructs are so funny because once I got the hang of just grabbing them with Ultra Hand, they're nothing.
Oh, they're so fun to fight though. Like,
they are fun, but like, I remember how.
Is that just because, like, you're kind of messing with them, like you're a kid pulling off legs off a bug? You're just removing their arms away and, like laughing at it, like, you can't fight.
And, like, a set thing...
Stop hitting yourself.
And, like a sending up and, you know, when they go into the sky, you're shooting arrows at them and, just bullying them.
Because that's always, like, my favourite thing to do against the Flux Construct is, like, you remove... like a couple of its cubes out of its hand and like, you know, it does like the punch attack. I just purposely stand where it would have hit me, but because I've removed the hand, it doesn't connect.
He's a bully in his heart.
Only you
don't
want to
know what he did to Koroks. So Jay, the piece of armor that I tried to talk about a little too early.
Yes, the evil spirit Greaves is our reward here, which might not seem too familiar. I think the chest piece is the more the more iconic look. But Eagle Eye,
yes.
Longer fans of the series might have a little inkling of what they're trying to do with these Greaves. But yes, these are, interestingly, they give like stealth up, which is odd. Like that's their effect.
Alright.
It's the true nature of Evil's Bane. It's like stealth attributes like that can sneak up on you at any time before you know it. Evil has been cast upon you.
Well, that
you.
Explains how he's managed to sneak up and get Sonya, right?
Yeah, I was about to say that, yeah.
Because, yeah, what we're finding here are bits of Ganondorf's outfit.
Yes.
Not the Ganondorf in this game. It's basically Ocarina of Time Ganondorf's outfit.
Isn't it like a throwback? It's a throwback to Ocarina, but it's like, isn't that what Phantom, like Ganondorf, looks like in Ocarina? Or am I way off on that and making stuff up?
I think he's on a big old horse. That's all I remember.
Yeah, but the rest the same kind of skull mask of like the armor set. Is that not an Ocarina?
Okay, maybe you're right.
There's like a Phantom like version of him.
There is a Phantom Ganon fight in Ocarina. Maybe you're right, he does wear the mask. Because, yeah, I was wondering, the mask is...
You are spot on, Jas. Yeah, I just had a look at some artwork from Ocarina, and yeah, you are absolutely spot on. It's Phantom Ganon. It's what they're going for here.
I'm glad I wasn't making that up in my head.
I just remembered
that. That'd be like a core memory, that wasn't real. I'd be like disappointed in myself.
When we got to the headpiece, I would have been saying, like, yeah, I don't know what this mask is all about. So I'm glad you said that.
I've just shared the picture with you guys so you can have a look at it, which is terrible for an audio content podcast.
That's pretty dope, though.
Yeah, very cool. So yeah, that's the reward we'll be collecting, is basically Phantom Ganon set from Ocarina.
Pretty cool set.
So next up for us will be to head all the way down south to the Gerudo Desert, where we have the South Lomé Labyrinth.
Yep.
Very similar, slightly trickier to get to just because it's in the desert. And it's not as close to anything you would be doing. Like, the one in, we just did, the North Lomé Labyrinth, it's up in the Hebra region, so it is up in the snow. But it's not that far away from, like, one of the tiers and one of the great fairies and a couple of shrines.
Yeah, I think
whereas you'd have to go out of your way to come here, really.
I did it after the tier. I distinctly remember having a go at that one. But yeah, this one's kind of, it's almost like down a separate little, like, valley, which is already out of the way, like, tucked away at the bottom right of the desert, right?
Yeah. Remember, I just had like a little journey
for the most part.
Desert glider, like to get to that one.
I think there is a shrine fairly near, and of course, there's also the Skyview Tower. So I think I sort of hopped my way over here. Jump down into the labyrinth to start it off. For the most part, it is similar to the previous one. You find the opening, like, ring, activate that, tells you to go and find the dragon ring within. And again, you can follow a previous researcher's guidance to get here. Once you do it, you have a sky one you need to climb up to. Once again, I think I made a balloon. I don't remember having too much trouble getting to the top with this one, so I think it maybe is not so high or has a few more islands along the way.
I distinctly think I did this one later than the others, so I can't...
then it would have been...
It would have been horrific time, yeah.
We get to the Sky Island. The most interesting thing about this one is the shrine...
Yes!
...at the top...
Probably one of my favourite shrines in the game, and it's so simple.
Yeah, me too. Do you remember this one, Jas?
I don't Doesn't ring a bell.
So the shrine up here is Unlit Blessing.
Sia Motsis.
So you arrive, it looks pretty much like Araru's Blessing. I didn't notice the name was different, but I noticed there were some fire flowers, some fire fruit plants nearby. And I actually remember thinking, oh, are these always in the Araru's Blessings? I just haven't noticed. And then you go to walk across to the shrine. Yep. And suddenly it swings away and you actually have to light some torches to get to the blessing.
It's so good. It's like, not yet. And yeah, this would be a real shame if this is one of your first like shrines. It'd be very odd if it was, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I think part of the, obviously the charm of this one is having done so many Rauru's Blessings beforehand that it's a nice little surprise. Really enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, since our last recording, I finished off the shrines. And as you guys know, I like to do a bunch of Overworld and then do a bunch of shrines. But I ended up having like 8 or 12 Rauru's Blessings. That I was just warp to the shrine, get the Rauru's Blessing, warp to the shrine, get the lying in bed doing that the night before our last recording. And then we ended up not recording.
Riveting stuff.
Yeah. So yeah. I get if they do follow a similar structure again in a Zelda game, I think I will just do the shrines as I find them.
Yep, lesson learned.
Yep, absolutely.
But there's a...
I don't learn lessons very often, but when I do...
So yeah, it's much the same in terms of once you're up here, it's diving and gliding around the sky version to activate 4 terminals. You get up to the top, activate a 5th. Big old skydive down to the depths. Bully a flux construct and Bob's your uncle. I think this is the mask for this one.
Is this the one with the gloom hand?
So I had a look. They all have gloom hands, but you have to kind of go off the beaten path to find them.
One of them has a gloom hand pretty much right where you need to go, though, right?
I think this is that one, yeah. Like, yeah, it's more likely to run into that one.
It's like almost.
Isn't there one like right down like center. When you land in the depths part? Yeah.
I think they're all. I think
it's not when you get to the depths, but it's standing over the gate. You would have to take to get to the depths, so you pretty much have to do it as soon as you start the labyrinth. Like Jay's saying, you probably can get around it, but again, because I did these labyrinths pretty late, I just killed it. It's no bother for me because I'm great at games.
And taking us home for the trilogy, we have the Lomi Lab Island.
All the way over in the east, right in the northeast. Sort of like the... You got Eventide Island in the bottom corner and this one in the top corner.
Yeah.
And then this one, again, not too different. The biggest difference is because it's out at sea. You have to like make a boat or something to get over there. And you're sort of splashing around in water the whole time. I don't know if this is just maybe because the order I did it in, I remember this one feeling very high to get up to.
You mean the sky part of it?
Yeah. Maybe there was less to land on along the way or something like that.
Every chance. I think it's quite... Yeah,
it's probably all very similar and it's just... experience.
The sky shrine on this one is Mogasari Shrine, which is also known as Courage to Jump, and I think this one has like a permanent low gravity, but it's like a little buggy ride with low gravity.
Oh yeah, this one's pretty cool.
Yeah, this one's a lot of fun. Like, you're on a...
It felt like a Halo Warthog run.
Yes! Great comparison. Great comparison. And you've got to go around like a little track. There's even enemies and stuff that you can run over with the buggy. It is proper Halo now that you say that. And yeah, there's like big gaps that you've got to rocket across. And I think the ending of it is you have to... You can either attach a couple of rockets to your vehicle to boost your way across the gap, or if you're very brave, you can Yoshi jump your way across by sacrificing your buggy to the depths and leap off it.
Yeah, I remember. It also has, like, you're sort of driving along some big, like, curved paths so that you're having to sort of almost roll cage, like, along a tilted wall. Yeah, it's a fun little vehicle challenge.
Yeah, it's got like a split path as well, hasn't it? Like on, like it's a like easy kind of track, but like it's kind of split, so you've got two ways to go. Like, do you risk it on the outside? Well, there's like some enemies.
That's it, isn't that the chest is on the risky path, or there's an easier path? Something
like that.
Yeah, good fun.
Properly made me think of the ending of Halo 3 as soon as you said that.
Yeah. Halo 1 as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, 3 is obviously superior.
And
we get the chest piece to complete our Ganondorf cosplay.
Mm-hmm. A Phantom Ganon cosplay, thank you very much.
Yes. Well, the chest and the legs.
The exact same.
Yeah.
It's just the mask.
So, on you go. You might have been about to say what
you were probably about to say the same thing I was. Yeah.
On you go.
So when we're doing these labyrinths, they do have like little messages from the sage or whatever who made these shrines. Just as all the shrines are like, I guess in this game it's implied they were all made by Rauru and Sonya, the actual shrines.
Whereas the shrines in Breath of the Wild,
it was a different monk made each one. But yeah, here we get that the labyrinths were made by some Zonai, who introduced themselves as like the Lord of Boars. The Lord of Owls is the one I remember noticing myself and being like, oh, hello, that's intriguing.
So it's the Lord of Boars, the ruler of owls, and the king of dragons or something like that. But basically, dragons, boars, and owls. So my take on this is that I think this is to do with the Zonai that turned themselves into the Divine Dragons.
Yes. So, well, they definitely, those three animals seem to line up pretty nicely with wisdom, courage, and power, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, Ganon...
Definitely, Ganon is a boar. Owls for wisdom makes sense.
Yep.
Dragons are slightly more of a stretch, but I guess, you know, courage and fighting dragons, slaying dragons, riding dragons, it's not too much of a leap.
No. So that's my take on it. It kind of lines up nicely, so whether or not you want to... Yeah, I would say it's probably that these are... What are the names of the dragons again? It's Farosh, Nedra, and Denrau, right?
Yes, which lines up again with the three goddesses who are also associated courage, wisdom, and power in older Zelda games. And I think we talked on a way earlier episode, right, about when Minoru first mentioned that humans can become dragons, we talked about, oh, well, I wonder if that's sort of where those three dragons come from. And also, that's why this game doesn't have the three goddesses that older Zelda games had.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, Hylia is the actual goddess, and those three were just Zonai who became dragons, because the game even talks about when the Zonai first appeared, they were worshipped as gods.
I think I did the owl one first, and I was initially assuming that Minoru had created all the labyrinths, because she's got quite a lot of owl imagery, like her... like the mask thing that we use to direct us to the depths because it looks like an owl, right? Lots of owl statues dotted about the entrance to where you go to the contract factory, things like that. And, you know, she seems like quite an industrious tinkerer, so it would seem like these would be the sort of things she would have a hand in making. But because there's three different animals, I prefer the other theory that this is three dragons that made them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I had the same thought, either that it was Minoru or that it was literally Kepra Gepra.
it also fits like with the connection of like the big chasm between like the depths to the surface up to the sky. Like a dragon would make that. You can imagine like a dragon piercing the hole that creates the chasm.
Yeah, it could be like the owl built the owl built the sky island, and the dragon dug to the depths, and the boar put the monsters in there that you fight or whatever. the three of them working together. Put the Klux construct in there.
Yeah, good bit of lore. Three good chunky shrine quests to do. Lots of fun. So we alluded to these earlier when we spoke about how I made it up to the North Lomé Labyrinth. But we haven't spoken about, even though we've had this quest for a while, the messages from an ancient era, the little star islands that are dotted about the sky, and the quest that you have to do that has to do with that in Kakariko.
Yeah, we touched on them way back at the start of the game because Pikango is painting them.
Yep.
And Wurtsworth will appear in Lookout Landing after your first main quest dungeon.
That's right, yeah, because one of them falls into Lookout Landing after your first main dungeon, right?
Yeah.
So he wants you to go and take pictures of all 13. Some of them, mostly it's just getting up there. Some of them are quite, some of them got a little surprise that when you do get up there, like the middle portion of the tablet will fall out and will like descend all the way down to Earth. And does one of them not end up in the depths?
One of them goes straight down a chasm into the depths,
which is quite amusing.
If you're quick, you can get the photo as it starts to fall.
Yeah, but come on.
Extreme photography again.
It's more fun.
Surprised you didn't figure that one out.
Don't worry.
I think on the one like kind of star island that fell to the depths, like I'm pretty sure like I was like riding it all the way down and then got into the depths and realised I was pretty much out of bright bloom seeds.
So I couldn't even take a picture.
Yeah, so I had to like dash about like in the dark in the depths for a bit to find some bright blooms and like navigate my way back to where it was.
Brilliant.
To get the picture. Got a big giant bright bloom seed like on like the kind of tablet thing itself.
I think I've never been lower than like 300 or 400 bright bloom seeds.
That was like the one time I kind of needed them, I was out of them, and then any other time after that, like I had like too many. Well, I'm not going to make that mistake again.
Fool me once, shame on me. But fool me, fool.
Don't get fooled again.
You're not going to fool me again. I'll never say the real version of that phrase ever again.
So once we return to Wartsworth, with all the pictures, or you can take them as you go, but you're better just taking all 13 to them at a time. He'll actually.
I did do them as I go because. Getting him to translate them is what marks them on your map.
Oh, so
it's easier to keep track of which ones I've done.
Okay. I think I put a stamp on them on the map after I got the picture.
Yeah. I did do that. I started when I took it seriously. I was doing that, but it turns out I'd already done some, and not others. So it was easier to use him for that purpose.
As I went as well, and then like kind of.
That's it, yeah, well, I did
the last
start naturally.
Half of them,
and
I was like, I'll finish all these off because I was like, kind of at the point in the game where I was like, I'm going to clear everything up in the Sky Islands.
Yeah, but yeah, if you're collecting them as you go, it's worth dropping in with him, because it will make it easier to see which ones you've done.
Fair enough.
Yeah, gaming tips from Luke and Jess.
So when you get them translated, they're given to you in like essentially like old or middle English, so you can kind of make out what the translation says. But it's, you really have to labour yourself to like read what it says. So for example, the first one, I'll try and read it as it's written. It's like, "So sweat the song of King Rauru, on so greet the beauty of his sister's dongs." it doesn't look right to read. And I'm not going to subject anyone to that. So fortunately, a kind soul on Reddit's actually tried to translate them into contemporary English. So we'll go for that.
Same, have a bit of chat with the board. Stuff as well, right?
So they've been
translations.
There's the difference is the Kakariko one was someone bothered to translate the made-up Zelda language.
Yes.
Whereas this is someone has done a better job of translating real old English.
Yes. It'd be very interesting to see how they handled this in the Japanese text. Like, how did they...
Yeah, I was about to say, there's probably a few things, actually, where we could get a different interpretation of some of the lore and stuff if we did compare it to the Japanese game. I know some Dark Souls podcasts I've listened to have had like things they've been confused by, and then a listener's written in like, "Oh, actually, if you just play it in Japanese, this is like given to you way more directly," and stuff like that.
I wonder, like, if the Japanese, though, like, I know
the big,
like,
one I've noticed there, here,
like,
is just that
kanji characters that are like kind of really old and aren't like kind of widely used like anymore. Mm-hmm. Would they do something like that for this?
Yeah, that's what they were doing. We were talking about with the like this, the sages, vows,
the sages, stuff. Like runes, yeah.
They're literally like old kanji for lightning.
I thought they would have just fire, etc. For like this kind of quest line as well, kind of fits for me, but
maybe.
So
that would be like more like ours. The version they've done for English is like kind of readable but weird.
Yeah.
So I think there are other ways to do that. Just by
Japanese
using
it would be unreadable to like majority of players.
Yeah, it would be like a different font basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they probably just use some slightly old fashioned wording. Although all of my high school students do have to learn old Japanese and they all hate it, so maybe they just use that. It's like the least popular subject, if you ask a Japanese student.
To be fair, if I was asked to try and read like Beowulf like in high school, I'd probably hate that as well.
When you read that little section just now, it really reminded me of the Stuart Lee bit, where he's like, he's making fun of Brexiters talking about, you know, coming over here and doing whatever. And he's like, yeah, we should all be speaking old English, right? And then he reads a big segment from Beowulf.
But so these messages are all kind of an account of King Rauru's reign. So you get a next bit, a little bit of lore. So the first one is titled "An Account of a Celebration." It says, "So sweet the song of King Rauru, and so great the beauty of his sister's dance, that were mine eyes and ears captive, and so nearby Queen Sonia gazed on us all, so felt as if mine heart had also fallen captive. A servant's life, though most laboursome, has much jollity as well. Long be the life of the royal family, whom I love so." So it's from a servant of the household, I guess, showing that they feel love and respect for the royal family. So there we go.
Yeah, I think that it turns out they're all written by
this one servant
character. Yeah.
Yeah. We get a little bit on Sonya's birth history. This one goes, "Sonia, queen to Hyrule's king, by birth a Hellion priestess, herself born of land, not of sky above. She spoke with an open heart, earnest to all, even to the Zonai's king. The king thought it would be a good adventure so to learn of the land's folk. To see his head bent down to listen is such pleasure. So, yeah, interesting. It's kind of talking about how even though the Zonai were revered and kind of spoke about earlier, treated as gods, Rauru bringing himself down to their to the people, you know, the same level as the people, was seen to be as this wonderful thing that Sonya could enrapture him so to do that. Another one here, the harmonious couple. Oft was Rauru, king of Fearless Blade, to avoid his real work in favour of the hunt. Some Game of Thrones shit right there, King Robert.
Yeah.
And oft wise Sonya, queen of keen insight, would seek out him and repair this king to kingly business. Get back to your fucking throne. In her safety.
Whereas I think Queen Cersei would much prefer Robert stay off his throne.
Correct.
And let her run the country.
Correct. In her sapience, she seems divine that she can ever find him, and for his folly seems him the more human. In the king, oh, he laughs. Not him her equal for her wit, he knew. And the queen she laughs to, even as she scolds him. So, kind of shows that, you know, a little bit about their characters and their, you know, their people. That
I do wonder when it says the hunt, but also like Fearless Blade. Does it mean going out to hunt for meat, or does it mean he's out, you know, doing some rangering and hunting down monsters? Like I bet Aragorn spent half of his kingship doing.
Yeah, probably with the King of Fearless Blade that's out there smashing up monsters, I would expect, right? And Sonya's like, look, you've got a kingdom to run. You can't just be going about, you know, slashing up orcs. Come back to Minas Tirith of Aragorn. This one's called A Pilgrimage of Light. The king was late to come this evening, and so made the queen to sharing tales of her land, of shrines all green and glowing. Of the early days since Hyrule's founding, have diverse monsters besieged and assailed her region? I don't know what that says. Unceasing in strife, they brought to despair folk's lives. The king and queen set themselves to bring the scourge to an end. With might of light and power, the monsters were driven aback, and the royal couple made these shrines to seal them away. These holy seals were named Shrines of Light. Great king, great queen, I thank you. You fought when I was a maiden child so that I could know peace.
I think that's realm, and he's accidentally put a U instead of an L.
Ah, okay. Yes.
That sailed her realm.
That would make much more sense. So yeah, good bit of lore there. I mean, we already knew
especially
this.
To learn that Sonya sort of also, like she was also like a sort of warrior queen before Rauru showed up. Rather than, because the previous one just called her like a priestess. And sort of we see loads of people revering Rauru because, oh, he's a great Zonai. So I like to see some props given to Sonya as well.
Some lore for Minoru next. Wise Minoru, the king's elder sister, falls so deep in her books, such that she oft forgets to eat. In my worried way do I what much I can, be of little avail. Of late discusses she of constructs, things that she make with her hands as vessel for spirit when the body fails. So said she, might she live long, in spirit housed within this construct. Though Minoru seems not to hold any deceit, by my faith, I cannot also believe in these words. So, if you did these early, this is some big foreshadowing for stuff that you eventually do in the story, right?
Yeah. This is the first mention of, like, Minoru still creating a body to still be around. I mean, you could just think, like, you don't have to necessarily believe that she pulled it off, but, you know.
It gets your mind thinking, right?
Yeah. It tends to be in Zelda. That was the meme where it's like, oh, there's an ancient weapon, and then it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to get that then. Like, that's how it works in Zelda.
It's fantasy as a whole, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but like some fantasy, like, it drops these little lore nuggets that are just there to make the world bigger, right?
Mm.
Whereas in certain, especially video game fantasy, it's like, if it's mentioned, it's because the player's going to get to do it.
Yeah, true, true. So, really quite interesting here. So this one's called The Foreign Princess. Fully fine is the weather this morning, and I have an audience with the princess said to be kin by distant years to Queen Sonia. By grace has she been given a name most sweet, of Zelda she was named. And certain folk suspicion stirred, for strange were her garments and sudden was her appearance. Yet would her countenance and bearing make proof of her right blood and bond to Queen Sonia. Also be Zelda to remain for a while with us. I will myself offer her service as the housemaid. So, if you hadn't done any of the tears, I guess this genuinely could have been your reveal that Zelda was in the past.
Well,
no, because you would have
talks about it as like, oh, yeah, there was a history, because we know from previous Zelda games, right? They name the Princess Zelda across many generations.
I guess, yeah, yeah.
And Wordsworth talks about it as like, oh, the historical Zelda did this, just like our Zelda. Stuff like that.
Right. I missed that.
But yeah, because I came to it having done the rest of the quest, that felt like sort of a knowing joke. Like, oh, yeah, this historical Zelda. And then she's doing things like, we'll get to later, where it's like clearly our Zelda going back in time.
Yep. So the next few are actually all about Zelda really here. So this next one, Princess Zelda recently came to see Minoru, the king's elder sister. I came myself, for her I serve. Today, it came to pass that Minoru showed to Zelda a construct that was the largest I have seen. Zelda, she much desired on it to ride, and no directions I gave could stop her, though I did protest loudly. Nevertheless, she made to sitting high upon the construct's shoulders and to ride it like a horse, all full of grace. My lesson so large already did grow all the more. So that's obviously alluding to the construct that Minoru puts herself in, right?
Yeah, the one that ends up being your fifth sage.
Yes.
Because Link can get on its shoulder and ride it, like I guess Zelda was doing for funsies with Minoru.
And if you had any doubt that this was our Zelda.
Yeah, I love this one.
Fashion
the one
does
I almost
not...
spoiled just now.
Fashion does not favour garments adorned with mushroom patterns, and foreign whiff they refuse. This taste for mushroom came of the castle seamster who sought to sew clothes to please Princess Zelda. This fashion, Zelda told to the seamster, was in her true home, well loved. In her time, would every pattern be of bright hues and the shape of mushrooms? Now her head seems to set heart on copying these patterns, which were sold to many happy people. I searched after some for my own, but couldn't find any. So this creates a real, like, chicken and the egg scenario, right? Like, because I wondered, like, did the people in Hathenau, like, maybe, like, find some old clothes, like, shaped like mushrooms? Go, like, wow, this is... Yeah, there's something to this.
Like scroll or something. Maybe, like, not the design kind of written on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it could be a little time paradox. But yeah, we don't. If it literally she said, like, oh, I'm bringing back this old Zonai fashion, then definitely we'd be in paradox territory. But it also could just be that she did create it and then Zelda took it back. But yeah, it's fun to think of it that way.
And the next one's another nod.
This next one is the one that does get into spoil it.
Yeah, sort of.
Not just spoiling, but
it definitely
getting you into some story stuff.
Story stuff, yeah. Of late I heard it told a strange lady walks around the castle in the dark of night. She and Princess Zelda seem also to be twins too, but this one had no light in her eyes, more as a dead thing than not. When she is asked about these walks, Princess Zelda remembers nothing of them. What monster or spirit of darkness be this vision? So afraid I am of my imaginings that I cannot sleep. Obviously alluding to, Phantom Ganon.
Phantom.
Yep. Without skull mask. And yes, this is now beginning to talk a little bit about Link now. So... since her founding has Hyrule seen such hardship, but that is only a small moment of time. Minoru, the king's elder sister, says of this kingdom that it will be on guard for hardship even to the distant future. Princess Zelda tells her that this future is already written, that a champion from the sky will come. Between the two, they made out finding a way to help this champion in distant time. Her main truth, they sought to uprising the Temple of Time into the sky to ward against evil. All done so in a distant day, our kingdom might be saved. In my heart, I wanted to help, and I asked of Minoru, can't you devise the means to uprise these stones into the sky? My words I see not soon, but they are memories saved of the royal family high in the sky for that future time. So this explains why all the these tablets are dotted about. The Minoru must have lifted up into the sky at the same time as they lifted the Temple of Time up there as well.
It also, like, is she talking about the events of this game? Or are they talking about the events of Skyward Sword?
Yeah, now we're getting into some wild shit, right?
I could go either way on that one. Because he talked about a hero of the sky will have to come to save Hyrule soon. It could be setting up that, yeah, the events of Skyward Sword will happen between this flashback and sort of the founding of Hyrule proper.
Yeah.
That we see in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, because it's not, like, even in, like, the memories in Tears of the Kingdom from, like, the Dragon Tears, like, it doesn't generally, kind of, I think we spoke about this before, but it doesn't give you, like, a long kind of timeline of how long Zelda was there in the past.
Mm.
Like, because you only see brief snippets and the only kind of change there is, like, the when she obviously goes upon, like, the when she turns into a dragon.
Dragonification, yeah.
Dragonification, that's it, yeah. Like, that's the only kind of moment where you're like, right, she was there for a long time, but how long was she there as a dragon?
Right. So yeah, she had time to tell them a lot about the future and set things up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Zelda games are always full of, like, prophecies. But yeah, it could turn out that rather than anyone being psychic, a lot of the prophecies are just Zelda telling them history from the future.
It's kind of a follow-up to the last tablet there. This one's about the Temple of Time. Such a wondrous sight I have beheld that it cannot justly be described. The Temple of Time I saw, and all land around it rising into the sky, both fearful and majestic. As Princess Zelda told me, in the distant future comes a champion to that place, in the hope that Hyrule is saved. For that champion be it that I inscribe these great stones. The king's elder sister, Minoru, now sends these stones to the sky, so that the champion might read them.
I've just noticed, talking about this, Link.
Yes, absolutely. But I've just noticed, every time that this person that's inscribing these tablets refers to Minoru, it's always the king's elder sister.
She doesn't get to be her own person.
Nope.
Not even Princess Minoru, just the king's sister Minoru.
Yep. And to close us out, Hyrule's king, Sonya, her queen, his elder sister, Minoru. I'm not even making that up. That's what it says.
Yep.
And also, Princess Zelda, all whom I served and loved, all whom have passed on. Alone I carve these words upon this stone. The stone and all 13 serve as the royal family's record, my final work, fully finished for all age. Many the marks made by these much beloved peoples, some easily seen, some unseen. When I make remembrance of their marks, I feel a flame of hope, though small within me. It be as though these marks describe some great design. I cannot measure Princess Zelda's love for her land. What more than ask can I do for these Hyrule peoples? Let my life lead me henceforth to an answer fully worthy of this question. So I take that last bit where she says, I can't measure Princess Zelda's love for her land to be, she's aware that Zelda's draconified, right?
Yeah. She's her, made such a sacrifice. Yeah.
Such a huge sacrifice for the sake of her land. Yeah, quite a melancholy end, but also a bit of hope in there as well. So,
yeah. Which makes sense, because this is all written before they knew whether you were going to pull it off or not, right?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, some a good chunky bit of lore in there. Nothing that's incredibly new as such, if you've been paying attention to the story.
The biggest new information we get is that, like, while Zelda was there, that was when they lifted some of these islands into the sky.
Yeah, it kind of contextualizes some of the events that we know have happened, just when they happened, and I think more importantly, just kind of fleshes out a bit around characters that we've only seen in a few scenes, like Sonya, you know, gives us a bit more knowledge and know-how about them. So thank you very much to Reddit user Jonathan Cactus for taking the time to do that.
Yeah, so obviously
ingrained in our brains that the King's Elder Sister is Minoru.
I think with that, we will continue our wrap up of some shrines, some quests, and so on before we barrel on to Game's End. We'll be doing that all next time, so make sure you join us for that. Until then, Luke, take it away.
Yeah, you can find this podcast on Twitter at HyruleFieldPod. We're also on Facebook, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Please do rate and review, like and subscribe. If you have friends who are playing Tears of the Kingdom for the first time or who want to relive it, shout us out. Let them know about this podcast. Tell them to play along with the show or listen to relive the game. And also, if you have any thoughts as we get close to the end of the game, if you have any shout-outs to parts we haven't mentioned or corrections to make or anything like that, please do get in touch. Send us a tweet, send us a message on Facebook. Find some way of getting in contact with us, we'll see it. To prepare for our final wrap-up listener Q&A sort of episode that we're planning to do when we get to the end. Which is mere weeks away.
Yeah, not long now. And if all you have to say is just unbidden praise for the three of us, we'll take that too. That's fine. We'll have that.
Oh, you know, we found like all those really nice reviews on our Apple Podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
They were all from the American Apple Podcast reviews. I found our British ones.
Uh-oh.
That was great. It was like a bit boring, but a nice listen, I guess. I was like, yeah, can't really argue with you, mate.
Fair.
Yeah, I can see that, like, in the early goings it was a bit dry, I'd say. To begin with.
Yeah, there's definitely some dry ones in there. The dryness tends to be how awake am I when we record, because sometimes I'm just like, Jay, do you want to read the next bit? Because I got nothing to say.
Yeah.
But I've got more used to waking up for him.
Well, of course, we can't finish without some sage words of advice for our main man, Jazz.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, since we've been chatting about some of the labyrinths, I'm just going to suggest that people go watch the classic British game show, The Crystal Maze, circa 1990 to 1993.
I thought you were going to go for the David Bowie film Labyrinth, but I'll take that too.
So Richard O'Brien is...
Yeah, the Richard O'Brien run, 1990 to 1993.
I must have been watching reruns then, because I remember that as a
kid. Oh yeah, like, I definitely had like seen like reruns. I don't think I saw it like when it was on either.
Just on Challenge all the time, right? Like,
well, even on like just on Channel 4 or whatever, I was watching it as a nipper.
Apparently, Richard Ayoade had a run from 2017 to 2020.
Yeah, I caught a little tiny bit of that. Yeah.
Never seen that one.
He's got the right energy for the host, that I can see.
Yeah. I can see him doing the job. Just surprised that he done it, that's all.
Although I think I'm no longer keen on Richard already.
Oh, leave on that bombshell then.
We'll catch you next time.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Peace.